Well, a happy Thursday and welcome to another edition of Sports Look here on Care Radio, brought to you by our fantastic Sports Look sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco John's, and Exchange Bank. Tom Couts and Gus Couts with you, and Gus, how about this? No Friday night football here on Care Radio, but we do have Friday volleyball on Care Radio. We'll be covering the Class 1A Volleyball State Championships going from the Wireless Arena, Dodge City, Kansas. But tomorrow we're going to make up for it. Okay? Here's what's happening on Saturday. Saturday, the Benedictine Ravens are going to be on the road traveling to visit an old nemesis at Baker University. K-Radio pregame at about 12:30. It is a 1 o'clock kickoff from Emil Liston Stadium in Baldwin City. And then, when that game is over, here's kind of the plan. We hop in the Care bus, you know, the big Greyhound. We roll back to Atchison, and as quickly as we can get into the gym, we will pick up the Benedictine women's basketball game with Manhattan Christian live. And I don't know if we can get back for the start. Depends how long the football game runs, but we'll be very, very close to the start. We will bring you the duration of that game, and then we'll be on hand to bring you the 7 o'clock tip-off for the Benedictine men, as the Ravens will be hosting Briar Cliff. So, Saturday, triple header here on Care Radio Football, and then a basketball double header. We're talking about football. That is the topic of conversation as around the state of Kansas. We have come to week 9, and as odd as it seems, week 9 is the postseason and the first round of high school playoffs.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that we've made it this far, right? It just feels like yesterday that we were starting that first game up at Amelia Earhart, and St. Joe Lafayette came to town, and all of a sudden now you are here at week 9, and a whole lot of games going on around the state, a handful of interesting matchups. What do you want to do? Start big?
Well, I was going to say real quick, we'll mention there are some games going on tonight in some of these smaller divisions. For example, Donovan West is going to be traveling to Canton Galva. Hoxie has got a trip to Leote. Casey Wyandotte is playing Shawnee Mission Northwest, so I guess it's not just all small schools. And, you've got Mound Ridge and La Crosse, Northern Heights and Wabunsee are playing tonight. Onega's got Thunder Ridge, just some of the teams, in our area. And, of course, Valley Falls has a tough draw as they have number one team in undefeated Little River tonight.
St. John Tipton is at Axtell, I think, tonight.
Let me just look here and see. I don't see it in front of me, but I'm sure. I think that sounds right somehow.
So,
There you go. Beloit and St. John's Tipton is at Axtell tonight. You're exactly right. And, of course, Rawlins County, which is in Atwood, Kansas. I don't know if you've ever been to Atwood. And that's okay. They're going to be at Meade tonight, hosted by the Buffaloes. So there's some games going on tonight. Now, this weekend, you'll see the Class 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth, A games. And, yeah, where do you want to start with all of this fun stuff?
Let's go big, work our way down, I guess.
All right, fair enough. And
so starting in Class 4A, the number one seed was Baser Linwood. They're going to get winless Labette County. Atchison kind of fell about where we thought they would. They were going to get that 3 seed. And I'm going to tell you, the 3 seed is probably a better seed to have than the 2. Okay? So in the 3 seed, they're going to host Fort Scott this week. And then if they can win that, they'll be playing November football against the winner of Ottawa and Eudora. On the top half of that bracket, Chanute was the number 2 seed. They get Bonner Springs. And the winner of that game will get the winner of Tonganoxie and Bishop Miege.
So for the Phoenix, yeah, it's a good draw. And, you stay away from the Mieges and the St. James's and the Baser Linwoods as you find yourself in that bottom side of the bracket. Because, again, Fort Scott, and then should the Phoenix be successful Friday night, Eudora, Ottawa winner. And then, they've got a good run ahead of them, it looks like.
Yeah, so it's kind of a nice little bracket setting up for Coach Smith and the Atchison Phoenix. You jump down through 4A. All of the 4A games, it looks like, are Friday night games, and the only one that's adjusted a little bit is Mulvane and Ulysses is at 6 o'clock game.
That's because there's about like 150,000 miles between those two schools, and so it's going to take a little bit of time to get them on the bus and get them all home before midnight. So, yeah, very understandable. As good games go, I would think Tonganoxie-Bishop Miege should be just a really, really interesting game, knockdown, drag-out kind of a game. And you've got to find out how good Miege is because their record, as most people would suspect at least, may not be indicative of just how good they are because of the 5A, 6A schedule they play.
Yeah, you know, you talk about Tonganoxie. They are 4-4. They've got two overtime losses. They lost at Lewisburg in overtime, and then they lost home with Spring Hill. I mean, there were two games that got away from them. They lost to Piper by 3. And in the first game of the year, they lost by 3 touchdowns to Baser Linwood. So you talk about a Tongi team who's 4-4, but should easily be 6-4. And you look at a Miege team and you say, well, maybe Miege is down this year. Miege is 2-6, but they've lost at Blue Valley North, at Blue Valley Northwest. They beat Aquinas by 3, lost at Rockhurst by 3, beat Blue Valley West, lost to Blue Valley, lost at Lutheran North in St. Louis, lost to St. James Academy, and so, I mean, you talk about a full schedule there.
Yeah, and the best teams in not just Kansas, but in Missouri, too. So, now, the adjacent opponent is Fort Scott, and to get you a little bit of information about those Tigers, don't be deceived. They're 1-7, but the problem that they've had, it looks to me like, just glancing through here, they're having a hard time getting any points rolled up. They have been shut out in 2 of their last 3 games, and in fact, their last game with Coffeyville, they scored 8 points. So they've scored 8 points in the last 3 games. But again, they play Independence in Pittsburgh, Chanute, Wamego, Coffeyville, Labette. I mean, they play a tough schedule. And on top of that, they started the season with 2 Missouri teams, Summit Christian at Lee Summit and over Butler. And those were both road games for them. So Fort Scott, again, 1-7, 1-3 in the Southeast Kansas League, and head coach is Bo Graham. So that's who the Phoenix have coming into Amelia Earhart Stadium tomorrow night.
Let's kind of jump around a little bit. We're going to just fly up to 6A and just glaze it real quick, because in Class 6A, Kansas City Atchison League opponent, Kansas City Wyandotte will play tonight. They'll be at Shawnee Mission North playing Shawnee Mission Northwest. So, that kind of blows your mind for a little bit. Harmon is also going to be in action. That's going to be tomorrow night, as they'll be playing Blue Valley. Just kind of glazing through there.
And again, with the big schools, and in Class 6A, the big schools are predominantly in the big cities, okay? And so, as a result, East and West kind of gets a little bit skewed because you got so many Kansas City teams that are going to be in 6A that some teams that are not very far west still end up in the west half of the state.
Do you think maybe that's just a truer sense of Western Kansas?
Yeah, not any big towns, not any big schools.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, if you are in Wamego, you really are in Western Kansas.
Maybe.
You know, I mean,
well, if you're in Gardner, Kansas, which is just south of Olathe, you're in Western Kansas.
Yeah, definitely Western Kansas.
And not only are you in Western Kansas, but you've got to go to Western Kansas because Gardner Edgerton is making the trip out to see the Red Demons.
Mm. How about Class 5A? Let's jump down there a little bit. Coach Monroe is going to take his Highland Park Scots on the road, and they're going to take on the Jaguars of Mill Valley. So, be a good way to kind of wrap up the season for them. Sumner is going to be playing Shawnee Heights. That should be a competitive matchup. Leavenworth going to get Blue Valley Southwest. Schlegel and Spring Hill. Aquinas will play Kansas City Washington. Ryan Kelly's Topeka West team going to get DeSoto. I thought Topeka West a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, scored 80. So their offense clicking a little bit. You got Capen versus Goddard. That's going to be on the 29th. Just flying back down through here. You've got Carroll and Hutch. So
yeah, a lot of really good teams there. And, again, Sumner Academy in it. With Shawnee Heights, you got some of those, those KCAL teams going to try to represent the conference a little bit.
Flying down to Class 3A, Hayden Hiawatha will be a first round matchup. That game's going to be played tomorrow night. Rock Creek, Bishop Ward. You've got Holton and Santa Fe Trio. That game going to be played tonight. Tomorrow will be Perry LeCompton, Sabetha. Wow. How about this game? Riley County and Russell.
Yep. See, you go to the West half. You break the bracket right there, and you go to the West half for Riley County, Russell. You've got
Southeast of Saline and Marysville. You've got Cheney and Clearwater and Wichita Collegiate versus Pratt.
One of my favorite mascots.
What, the greenbacks?
The greenbacks. You don't get a lot of that.
Now down to Class 2A and a little closer to home. Tomorrow night, it's going to be ACCHS at Silver Lake. You're going to have Rossville and Republic County, Nemaha Central and Pleasant Ridge. St. Mary's Colgan will get Humboldt. Cimarron and Norton, Beloit and Lakin. You've got Kingman taking on Hutch Trinity. Wrap up their season since they're not in the actual bracket play. They'll be at Oskaloosa on the Bears.
Absolutely. So. Go down to 1A, some teams that we have seen quite a bit, you know, over the course of the season as well, with Opie getting a bye.
I love the byes. I mean, I'm looking down through this bracket, and it's a good-looking bracket.
It is, and I'll tell you who else gets a bye. Jefferson County North. So congratulations to the Chargers as they're going to advance, and they will be playing the winner of Uniontown and Troy. And that's not until, of course, next week on the 5th of November. Opie will be up against the winner of Jackson Heights and Central Heights. We got the chance to watch Jackson Heights last Friday evening. Gus, I like that team.
Yeah, you know, Jackson Heights is a team who plays really good. They actually did play at Opie earlier this season, and Opie came away with a 35-0 win. Opie gave up only two touchdowns all season, and that was to one team. They beat Linden 70-12, okay? So I'm going to say Linden got those two touchdowns this season in mop-up time.
Let's say late in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you probably got something there.
I mean, you start looking at these numbers for Opie. Since giving up those two touchdowns on September 17th, they went on to win 63-0, 63-0, 35-0, 59-0, 43-0. So you talk about a machine down there in Opie, and head coach Chris Schmidt has that team playing well.
By the way, Horton is in the postseason, and they are going to be traveling to Linden. It seems like we've seen Linden in the postseason so many years, back to back to back, as they're a traditional team it used to be 2A, now in 1A. You go out to the west half of the state, Sedgwick and Smith Center get byes. And teams who are going to be playing this weekend would include Conway Springs hosting Sacred Heart. And, man, you get out west in Mountain Time Zone, you've got Oakley and Elkhart.
Mm.
In the heart of beautiful Morton County, Kansas.
Hill Saline and Stanton County. You've got Plainville versus Sublette. And it's weird for me to see Conway Springs down to a 1A team.
A lot of shifting around. You know, we're going to see a lot more of that next year as you know, they have reassigned a lot of the teams. And there's a bit of a jumping around there with Valley going up, Valley Falls going back up to 11-man football and some things like that. So a lot of interesting things coming up next year. A lot of great stuff coming up, though, here in the next few weeks. Postseason, high school football, find your team. Check where they're at. If you don't remember all of the information we've shared, go to mscsports.net and check those schedules. With that said, we'll be back. More Sports Look right after this. Welcome back to Sports Look here on CARE Radio. Great to have you with us on a overcast, drizzly kind of a Thursday, because it's very autumn-like. We talked about football, and we talk about Heart of America Athletic Conference and college sports and the Benedictine Ravens football team last week. It was a very good win for the Ravens, a win that they, I think, really needed. And it had to feel good to beat a foe in Missouri Valley up at Wilcox Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Ravens, you know, beating a Missouri Valley team, you know, getting on the right track in the South Division, all those things are good. Were there a few things that they could have cleaned up from that game? Sure, but I think any game you look into, you're always going to be able to find that one thing that a team you know, could work on, should work on. But at the end of the day, I mean, the Ravens look good, and anytime you score 47, it's a nice day for your offense. And, of course, with that being said, you're going to have a good opportunity to get a Heart of America Athletic Conference Player of the Week out of that kind of a week.
I think so. And it's always great when your team starts off with the special teams doing something outstanding. And Ravens got their scoring started on the safety to begin the game. And we talked about it during the course of the broadcast, the punter for Missouri Valley, who had a snap to him that was hard to field, went back, picked it up off the ground, and boots it out the back of the end zone off a hop. And he did a pretty good job of kicking that away. That's not easily done. And Ravens got up 2-0, ultimately 16-0. And you talked about Garrett Kettle. What a day he had again. Garrett was, he was just outstanding. 18-28 passing for 351. And then, you know, turns around and rolls up 49 yards on the ground on 13 carries. He was the Ravens' second leading ground gainer. Ran for 2 touchdowns, threw for 4 touchdowns. That is a good afternoon.
Yeah, anytime you account for all 6 of your team's touchdowns, that's going to be a good game. But, you know, you talk about Garrett Kettle, and he was the number 2 rusher on this team from Saturday's game, right?
Yeah.
And I believe I go back and have to check the stats, but, you know, he and Rayshon are kind of hanging out around each other on leading rusher for the season. But, you know, that's one of those areas that Benedictin really doesn't look to run the ball a whole lot, but you always worry when your quarterback is one of your leading rushers, right? But Garrett Kettle is one of those guys who he can be one of your leading rushers because Garrett doesn't take many hits, right? Like, I mean, you'll see him get down the field and then go into that baseball slide. He steps out of bounds. I mean, Garrett does a nice job with how much he runs the ball of not taking the big hit.
And that said, not only did Garrett throw 4 touchdowns, he ran 2 touchdowns. Garrett also had 1 punt on a quick kick in the middle of the game, and he had 1 absolutely impressive special teams kick coverage tackle.
Yeah, a lot of times you don't like your quarterback making a tackle, right? Because usually that means they've turned the ball over. But I'm okay if it's going to be a special teams tackle.
Yes, and they had Garrett out on the edge, and I'll tell you what, he got downfield, showed some great speed, and that was, if you're a student of the game, that was a textbook wrap him up and put him on the ground kind of a stop.
So you think about this. Garrett Kettle has played 2 special teams plays where he's been a gunner on punt.
Yes.
He has a tackle and a fumble recovery, right? Like, I mean, he has done his job so far at that. Taking a quick look around the conference from games that went on last Saturday, Grandview, no problem with Graceland, winning 77-9. Culver-Stockton sneaks by Clark, 17-6. Central Methodist over Mid-America, 41-24. I think that was a tie game at the half. Peru State blanks William Penn, 28-0. And Evangel held around with Baker for a while, but the Wildcats upping the Valor, 34-21.
You just wanted to say Valor, didn't you?
I do. I love throwing that in there.
Well, there are a lot of cool games going on around the conference over the course of the weekend. 2-12, 2-1, and 2-2. How about that?
Mm.
First game of the day is going to be William Penn traveling over to Culver-Stockton. Could be a competitive game, but Culver's been playing really, really well. You got an ugly game coming up here, I would suspect, as Peru goes to Des Moines, and they're going to be hosted by Grandview. Those are the 2 noon games. Of course, at 1 o'clock, the game we'll have here on K-Radio with Benedictin at Baker. Up in Lamoni, it'll be Clark at Graceland. Could be also a competitive game, maybe. It's Graceland. Is this their best shot?
This is their only shot.
Okay, fair enough.
And it's a small shot.
And then, of course, the 2 o'clock games. In Olathe, it'll be Evangel at Mid-America. And in Fayette, it is homecoming as Missouri Valley makes that short hop over to Central Methodist.
You know, when we were over there a couple weeks ago at Central Methodist, we were talking to some of the people around and things, and I don't think I really put together how big of a rivalry Valley is for them, right? And I mean, I get it because geographically it makes sense, but I think you look around the conference and you don't think about some of these rivalries because, you know, in like some of the main sports, they haven't been overly competitive, right? But then you think about it, like, even if a middle-of-the-pack Valley team is playing a middle-of-the-pack Central Methodist team, Like, that's a good rivalry because that's a good game. They're close. I mean, they're competitive in other sports. I think maybe soccer, I think they're both pretty good at. So, you know, yeah, there's no love lost, I guess, between those two teams. You kind of gather that it's a lot like that Benedict and Baker rivalry.
And you talk about how close it is. So for people who are not really familiar, to go to Missouri Valley, it's I-70 exit 78. To go to Central Methodist, it's exit 102. So basically, I mean, and you can cut across country up there and shave some off that. It's 20 miles. It's as if Benedictine had an opponent in St. Joe or Leavenworth.
Yep. So anyway, should be a handful of good games around the conference on the football side. And can you believe there's actually basketball going on this weekend?
And it is an exciting time in basketball as Benedictine, of course, got their season underway last night. And Gus, that's not even close to the first game of the season in this conference. William Penn has been playing for a week already.
Yeah, and for William Penn, how about their first game out last Friday night? And they got a scare from Dort, knocking off Dort 93-90, that game in overtime, having gone up to Chicago. And then night two out, they beat Governor State 90-66. Tuesday night, the 26th. So Tuesday night, Clark fell to William Woods 72-62. Last night, the Cornhuskers put one on Peru State, 97-58. Peru State has now funded the whole basketball season.
Is that not like when Kansas plays the Emporias or the Hazes or the Washburns or the Pittsburghs?
I'm sure. You know, it's a state school playing a state school, right?
Yes.
Last night, Evangel, under a new head coach, knocked off College of the Ozarks down in Point Lookout, 89-71, and Rocky's team rolled over Kansas Christian College, 104-64.
Okay, and we don't want to run too long because we've got a great interview coming up here with Dennis Murphy, so we want you to stick around for that. But, Gus, I'm feeling especially old, which is not unreasonable, but there's such a changing of the guard going on around the conference because over the course of the past few seasons, some of the very long-term coaches have stepped down and have retired after long and wonderful careers. And you mentioned a new coach at Evangel, Steve Jenkins, who was there since 1979, and he stepped down last year, and there's a new coach there. And you've got Rocky, who's going to make the farewell tour this year, as he's retiring at Mid-America. You know, so some of these guys that we've been used to seeing moving on.
Yeah, so I mean, you stop and you look around the conference and you think about some of the long-term coaches. I mean, you're talking Jeff Sherman right now.
Yep.
You know, and Rocky. Rocky's been there for a while, but Rocky's not been there as long as you think, right? Because you think of Rocky as having been there forever. I mean, but a lot of people forget Coach Peterson was there, and then Rocky was there in 86, 87, 88, somewhere through there, right? Like late 80s, early 90s is when The Rock came in. And, you know, then you start jumping down. I mean, John Henry's been at Penn for a long time, but Penn hasn't been in the conference for a long time. Jason Klein has been at Park for a long time, but Park has only been in the conference 2 years. I'm just looking up
Coach
and down.
Coach Moody's one of the more long-term coaches at this point.
How crazy is this? You know, Chad Lance is going to be right up there, probably for the third or fourth longest in the conference, right? And I mean, I remember when they hired Coach Lance, and that doesn't seem like it's been that long ago, you know, as he replaced Pfeiffer and the program stayed pretty stagnant either way.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
But they do have 70-plus players on the team.
They do. So, yeah, it's kind of weird to see, you know, some new people and new faces across the way on the sidelines this season.
Hey, but I tell you what is exciting is the basketball season underway. Again, congrats to Coach Moody and the Benedictine guys for their win last night. And we look forward to seeing Raven basketball after football game. Raven basketball, get on up to the Nolan Saturday evening and take in the doubleheader. Tell you what. We've got lots more. We've got a great guy, a great interview. You're going to have fun with this. Dennis Murphy coming up right after this here on Sports Look. We're joined by Dennis Murphy. the newest inductee into the Benedictine Athletic Hall of Fame. Coach, how are you, man?
Good today. It's a beautiful day in Atchison.
Coach, first of all, everybody needs to know this is totally unscripted, so I don't even know where either one of us are going to go with our conversations here today. But first thing we got to throw out is, how cool is it that you've got the honor and people have recognized all the years of work that have gone into what you've done at Benedictine and going into the Hall of Fame? That's got to be a cool moment.
It is a humbling experience, there's no doubt, and a lot more attention than I'm used to. I'm used to being the one in the background and let Coach Wilcox and Coach Garmeyer and all the other people take front seat, and I usually ride in the back seat. But the attention is fine and nice, having fun with it.
Well, and are you also having fun with the retirement now that you're a year in? Is it everything is cracked up to be?
Yes. I'm getting better at doing nothing every day. So it takes time and practice, but I'm working at it, and eventually I'm going to perfect it. So.
And, of course, it allows you the time to maybe spend a little more family time because grandbabies are a fun thing, right?
Yes, we've got a brand new four-week-old baby out in Colorado and just got back from getting to see her. And then our four-year-old our granddaughter is also a great fun thing. The grandfather thing is a great job to have.
Well, let's talk about the great job that you had at Benedictine with football and with coaching and with instructing up there. First of all, you know, you've worked with so many teams and so many great guys over the years. There have to be, you know, it's got to be hard to pick out a guy or a team, but I would think that particularly like postseasons were a big thing and a lot of fun.
Sure. There's, getting to be able to get to the playoffs was always kind of the goal. And being able to be successful throughout the season was, you know, something we worked at every day. Being able to, get into the playoffs and being able to play a couple more games than just the first one was always the plan. You know, it didn't always work out like that, but we're very fortunate. You know, I mean, you look at how many teams never even get to take a sniff at being able to have any kind of post activity, we've been able to do it a lot, so that's really a neat thing to do.
First year that Benedictine made into the postseason, I mean, there for a while, you know, the program was young and you were just kind of growing and getting it figured out. And then you started getting close, and then finally it was kind of that breakthrough moment when you got to the postseason. That had to be like a big deal for a lot of reasons. Making it and getting there.
Yeah, well, getting to play Northwestern Iowa in Amelia Earhart Stadium was an eye-opener because it was so unbelievably cold that day. And they walked out in half shirts and playing in freezing cold weather because they're used to the cold. And I was standing over there with 14 coats on. So it was definitely an interesting day. Came close to beating them, you know, and they went on to be able to be real successful in the playoffs. They were always a great team, but it was always fun to be able to get into that postseason thing.
And we talk about postseasons and postseason games, and certainly, you know, that first one with Northwestern, getting them to come down here, you know, that was such a huge deal. And then people will think about the Hail Mary game and, you know, the overtimes of that. And, of course, the guy who coached the receivers for that game probably drew that last play up exactly the way it went, right?
Not at all. I'll remember distinctly. We got the ball back and we were all ready to go. And I pulled out five receivers and I said, "We got to get a lot of targets out there. Everybody fly down the field, find a location." And we had practiced it before. And Coach Wilcox grabbed me by the collar and pulled me back and says, "We need somebody under the block." So he put a fullback in for the receiver. Thank God he did, because that gave Miles just that extra minute to be able to get the ball up in the air and get it down on the field and be able to complete the pass. You know, so it wasn't all my plan by any means.
Well, we talked to Brad Hubbard earlier in the year. He was that fullback that got pulled in, and he said he was back there to backfield and said he had a wonderful view of the thing. And then, of course, it was not necessarily set up to go to Craig Johnson, who was not your tall receiver at the time, but ultimately he was the guy.
Well, he's still short, so he hasn't gotten any taller over the years. But Matt Fowler was the sweeper, and he knew what he was supposed to do, and so he ended up being bouncing around. And Matt was just following the course of the ball, and it just tipped his way just perfectly, and he was standing on the field. He had to catch the ball and dive in the end zone. So it was a pretty exciting event.
Coaching receivers. I mean, I think people don't appreciate everything that's involved in being a wide receiver, particularly at the college level. They think, oh, the guy goes down the field and you throw him the ball and he catches it and it's a touchdown. Probably a little more to it than all of that.
Just a little bit, but, you know, I always kid, you know, I say, you know, the receiving isn't that difficult. You either go down, take a right, left, or keep going. But, you know, being able to fit into the system was, I think, the key to the success that our kids had. It wasn't a pass-happy offense. It wasn't, it was an offense that was based on being able to run the ball successfully, and when they put nine people in the box to stop the run, then that made the passing game, you know, very successful. And we were allowed to be able to have great combinations of run and pass that allowed us to be able to be real successful and not have, you know, everybody thinking that the only thing we want to do is run the ball or the only thing we want to do is pass the ball. Now, the success, I think, of the total picture was what we were aiming at all the time.
And that always evolved every year because it seemed like, you know, Benedictine used many different offenses over the years that you were there, and, you know, it varied depending on the talent that you had, you know, in the athletes at the time, what their strengths and things were, that you would utilize them to best of their abilities. So sometimes, you know, there were more thrown around. Sometimes, you know, there were fewer, but you were constantly changing and evolving that thing.
Well, I think it's just, you know, fitting the personnel we had. You know, we've had some guys that were great throwers as quarterbacks, and we had some, you know, receivers that were kids that could fly, you know, and really run. But that wasn't the same every year. And you needed to adjust to what they're going to be successful with and what they, you know, team can be able to get the best out of. And then, you know, what our opponents were doing, too, had a lot to do with that as well, what kind of defense they were running and, you know, the personnel that they had, and if we found a weakness, you know, we were going to take it. You know, if they were poor in the defensive line, couldn't stop anybody from running the ball, we were going to run the ball all day. You know, and if we found a weak sister in the secondary, we were going to go after him too, you know, so.
Gus and I love to watch games, whether it's high school games, college games, and one thing that we love to see, and we always talk about Dennis Murphy when we see this and how proud you would be, when you see one of those receivers 10, 12, 20 yards downfield, blocking for whether it's a running back or a fellow receiver who's gotten the ball, to continue that play out, because, again, it's more than just catching it. If you're not out there watching the game, you're part of the game, and you got to do something, and blocking's a big part.
Sure. You know, I mean, they're only going to catch 4 or 5 balls a game, and that's a lot. And the other 70 plays, you know, in the game, they better be blocking. They're going to have to do their job as being able to spring a guy loose at the end, and we took pride in that. We always made the comment we want to be the best blocking wide receivers in the conference, and the kids really took to that and worked at it. When the drills that you can use for blocking aren't really the greatest drills in the world, you know, because open field blocking is more of an attitude than it is a physical aspect. So I mean, practicing blocking isn't the easiest thing to do, but when it gets into game situation, you've got to be able to make it happen, and that's one of the things that I think our guys always really shined with, is, you know, being great blockers.
And Coach, you got to see, we were talking about, you know, the playoff game earlier. You got a lot of playoff games over the course of the season, and a couple of also, you know, thrilling bowl games. We went over to, you know, Steamboat Bowl, and we were down to the Sunflower Bowl, and we were out at the Wheat Bowl. I mean, over the years, you've seen a lot of great receivers in a lot of great venues, and surely there's some guys that maybe stand out or a particular game or play or something that that you look back on with particular pride or interest.
Well, Aaron Jackson was a dynamic receiver for us. He came in as a transfer and a Division I guy, and there wasn't a whole lot of people that could hang with Aaron. He was but very attentive kid. He came in, he had to learn a whole new offense in a very short period of time, but he lit the place up, and made things go the way that were unbelievable, and we're able to go all the way to the national championship game with Aaron, and so he was obviously going to stand out. But guys like Matt Fowler that were first team All American kids, when you take a look at them, if you take a picture at them and say here's a first team All American wide receiver, you might giggle a little bit, he was a hard working kid, gave every ounce that he had, and made some big plays for us. Connor Walsh is another first team All American kid that, when he first showed up, he was skinnier than me, and I was skinny at one time, and he became a lot more attentive to trying to hone his craft a little bit, become a lot better receiver than he was when he was in high school in St. Louis, and he also stood out, and then obviously became an All American with it. But there's, there's other guys, there's Tom Brotherton. My first year, I had three receivers, Tom Brotherton, Mike Hostie, and Russell Hines. Those guys, my first year here, they did everything I asked them to do. They never backed away from, listening and paying attention. And I was first team. First year coach, so, they didn't have to believe me or they didn't have to attend to me, but they did, and we ended up doing really well, had the, a year of, newness to the situation because of the fact that it was our first year and we weren't that successful, but stepping stones started to appear and we started to move in the right direction and ultimately it was a real neat experience for me to be able to come in and have guys be real respectful and responsible for what we asked them to do.
Well, certainly it's all worked out over the years, and the teams have been fabulously successful and probably kind of a template for a lot of other schools, that wanted to craft themselves in the mold of Benedictine. But you did get a chance to put your foot in the waters of head coaching because you were a very successful coach of the longtime JV program up here.
Yeah, the JV thing, when we first started out, became a really important thing because in our recruiting of kids, we knew that the younger guys weren't going to play, but we wanted them to gain some experience. We wanted that experience to be really, really successful. And part of that was learning how to win, learning how to be able to go out and win football games and play well and demonstrate that they knew how to be successful. And that really made a difference, I think, in how the program developed, especially early in the early, 80s and even into the 90s, when we started seeing success, the growth of those younger guys early, I think, made a difference in them being able to be real successful as they got to their sophomore, junior, and senior year.
And Coach, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, and I like to say this to coaches, and it's always true, your job and for you to be as successful at it as you had been during the course of your career at Benedictine would have been absolutely impossible without the right person at home keeping the home fires burning. And how is it you coaches all marry over your heads?
Well, we're all pretty lucky because none of us are that good looking. So we got pretty lucky to be able to run into some gals that were willing to put up with our nonsense, is what we call it. Because we're gone early and we come back late, and your kids have to adjust to it. The wife has to adjust to it, but they were tremendous in being able to adjust. This weekend, my son Sean's flying in from Denver. He's got the 4-week-old, and he's going to be here. And his wife, said, you're going to the Hall of Fame dinner regardless of what, your dad says. And My daughter's here from Virginia. You know, she made a special effort to get here as well. So it's really neat to be able to have great family support and people that are willing to put up with, you know, the things that we torture them with by being gone all the time.
Well, Coach, we can't thank you enough for your always being willing to take time out and visit with us and the many hours and the great things that you've done with the Benedictine program and for the school, and not just out on the football field, but don't forget that you've been a mentor in the classroom too, because you are on the front edge in the very beginning of a athletic training program up there.
Yes, with the athletic training thing. Is that what you said?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Okay, I'm sorry. I can't hear very good.
but yeah,
well,
you...
the steps taken there were really fun. You know, I mean, Tom Schrawise was our team doctor at the time, and he wanted to start an athletic training program, and so he and Jim Speary, God rest his soul, was willing to take the time to get us in the right direction, get me certified as an athletic trainer, and be able to make those moves to be able to develop a program that ended up being a real good program, you know, for the college and for our athletic department, and allowing us to be able to have first class. And right today, you know, Patrick Hodapp is running the program, and he does such a tremendous job of being able to take care of the athletes and being able to wade through some really difficult things like the last 2 years has been. And so all those things kind of started from a long time ago, but, you know, it's really neat to be able to see, you know, the success of what we tried to start a long time ago to come to a head.
Last thing, Coach, 1979, you decide, I'm going to leave this gig in Seneca, going to try something new in Atchison. Did you ever think that 40-plus years later, you know, that it would have gone that well?
Absolutely not. My objective was is to come here 2 years, learn as much as I could, and then, you know, go find another job, you know, because I was living in the dorm and didn't particularly want to do that. And, you know, I was paid, you know, minimally, which was okay with me because I was still in the learning phase, still learning, trying to figure out a little bit more about how to coach and how to be a good teacher and how to be a good person. So when I got here, you immediately could sense the direction of the program and where it was going to go, and that all stems from Coach Wilcox and what he had in mind and how he wanted to get it done. And, you know, it wasn't going to be a splash in the pan thing. It was going to be a long journey. And, you know, for me, I interviewed one time while I was here. And the whole time I interviewed, I felt guilty as all get out because I didn't want to be gone from Benedictine. I wanted to stay. And so I finished the interview and drove home. And, the guy called up and I says, no, I'm staying. You know, I'm not going to go and, you know, vacate this time. And just too neat of a situation, too fun of a, you know, of a job. It was never really considered a job. It was just a thing I got to do every day. And ended up being the greatest experience that I could ever have dreamed of.
Coach, we are all very fortunate that you made the decision to be here and to stay here, and appreciate everything that you've done. Appreciate all the conversations that we've had. We're looking forward to a lot more of them. And again, congratulations on your being inducted into the Benedictine Athletic Hall of Fame. Well earned. Good job, man.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Thank you for everything you do.
Back with you here on Sports Look. Good to have you with us tonight, Gus. As we move into rapid fire, the Kansas City Chiefs have got their fans worried. I think very worried because after, again, another loss, and not just a loss, but a beatdown by the Titans over in Nashville, Chiefs fans are saying, we're not going to go 20-0 because we're not going to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they make the playoffs, and right now if you're the Chiefs, you're like, and this sounds crazy, as a Chiefs fan, I'm okay if you get that top 10 draft pick, right, and try to retool your defense or something, because right now I think that's where you need to be. Because the worst thing that could happen to this team is you sneak into the playoffs and then you're like a 24 pick in the NFL draft, right? Like, I mean, at this point, you kind of want to be a little closer to 10 than 25.
All season long, they've been talking about the Chiefs' defense, and you just mentioned it again there and how ineffective they have been. And yet, the offense is not what it has been. They did not score a touchdown. Got 3 points in the game against the Titans. You are not going to win a game in the NFL scoring 3 points. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, I mean, and for the Chiefs' offense, I mean, you talk about it's still putting up crazy numbers, like yards-wise. But, again, if you're not holding on to the football, I think right now, I heard the other day, 41, 43 turnovers is what they're on pace for at this point, and you can't do that in this league. This week, they're going to turn their attention to Monday Night Football as the Giants will come to Arrowhead in Kansas City, a 9.5-point favorite. 52 points is the over-under. I think you're going to blow right by that. The Giants aren't very good, but the Chiefs aren't playing very good right now.
No, absolutely. And Monday Night Football guys never dreamed that they would have a 2-5 and a 3-4 team playing here in this game.
Monday Night Football guy never should have put the Giants on Monday Night Football. I don't think they ever had a chance to be good this year.
But if you want a good game, you can tune in tonight. The Thursday night game is going to be spectacular. You've got the Packers and the Cardinals, both with sterling records.
Yeah, the Packers and the Cardinals. You talk about the Packers, they're the underdog coming into this ballgame, and that's really just because they have a couple wide receivers that are out on the COVID exempt list right now, and for the Cardinals, playing really good football, but looks like they might have lost J.J. Watt for the season. Arizona's 6.5-point favorite. I know you're looking forward to Sunday at noon.
I am. I am so looking
Everybody
forward to
Everybody should be.
Our old buddy, who's going to be the head coach, albeit, you know, an interim, head coach of the Chicago Bears, Chris Tabor is going to take that job because Nagy is under the weather. He's in the COVID protocol. And so Chris Tabor is going to be the interim head coach for the Bears as they are in Soldier Field hosting the 49ers. I want him to get a standing O.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Nagy right now is in the COVID protocol.
He's also in the doghouse with any Bear fan.
Right, and I think that it's going to kind of go twofold. I don't think he's going to be able to get out of COVID protocol. Like, there's a slight chance that he is going to be, you know, back and on the sideline this week. But can I tell you, if you're the Bears upper management, this is a chance to maybe get a look at somebody else on the staff. So I don't think that they're going to be too upset if Nagy's not able to coach. And so Bears-Cowboys Sunday at noon. Or Bears and 49ers Sunday at noon. You talk about the Sunday night game. The Cowboys at the Vikings. Dallas only a 1.5-point favorite in that ballgame. Can't tell you. The Cowboys 5-1, and nobody believes in them because of Mike McCarthy.
Nope, they don't believe in him. And Cowboys coming off a bye week, so you know they're probably going to be warmed up and ready to go. And you know Jerry is smiling every day right now because they've been playing pretty well, actually.
You know who's probably smiling a little bit is Coach Lance Leipold down at Kansas because his team for 3.5 quarters played with Oklahoma, right?
No question about
it. I mean, I think you got to be – you're upset that you lost that game, but you're happy with the way you played, right? Like, if it weren't for a crazy forward, lateral, behind the line of scrimmage on a fourth and just wins that game, right?
Yeah, the quarterback literally reached in and ripped the ball out of his running back's hands as he was being tackled and advanced it and picked up the score. And, yeah, so for Kansas – you got to be feeling pretty good. If you're Oklahoma, you got to be going home and going, yikes.
Yeah, Oklahoma has played way too tight with too many teams this year. Kansas is going to go down to Stillwater and get number 15 Oklahoma State on Saturday, a 6 p.m. game. Oklahoma State a 30.5-point favorite. We're going to see how Kansas bounces back. They could get blasted by 40 in this game. Or it could be another game where they play close and lose by 13-15, something like that.
Close game on tap, by at least expected to be, is that TCU is going to travel out to Manhattan, Kansas. They've got Kansas State at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon. K-State is only a 3-point favorite at home in that one.
Saturday morning game, Michigan, number 6, will be at number 8, Michigan State. That game in Ann Arbor, Michigan, a 4-point favorite in that one.
Auburn fans are going to be at home, and they've got a tough one with Ole Miss coming in. Number 10, Ole Miss. Number 18, Auburn. Saturday evening, 6 o'clock game. Auburn is a 2.5-point favorite. Again, I always find it odd when the lower-ranked team is picked to win games.
Yeah, you know, but also being at home. And then the Saturday night game on ABC is going to be number 20, Penn State at number 5, Ohio State. It is Big Ten football, so nobody really cares. But Ohio State is an 18.5-point favorite. I turned on the other night the Ohio State-Indiana game. Turned it on, saw the score, turned it off because that was just ugly football.
Hey, a pretty good World Series going on. After last night's game, tying the series up at one game each, It will continue, not tonight, but it's a travel day today, and tomorrow it will be Astros at the Braves, Friday evening, 7 o'clock ball game on a 1-1 tied World Series.
Do you wonder who picks out the time of the game? Because 7:09 is just
now, that way
baffling.
You've got the programming starts at 7.
Oh, yeah,
and
there's
we got
definitely something,
stuff.
Yes, but it just makes me laugh.
Tell you what we've got. We've got a great upcoming schedule here on Care Radio. Friday night, it's going to be state volleyball here on Care Radio from Dodge City, Kansas. And then Saturday, the triple dip. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff. Benedict then at Baker, 12:30 pregame here on Care Radio. Then we dash back to the Nolan Gymnasium. The Benedict and Lady Ravens begin their season. They're hosting Manhattan Christian at 5, and the Benedict and men will follow them, hosting Briarcliff at 7, all three games here on Care Radio. Got to thank Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco Johnson Exchange Bank, and until we greet you next time, for Gus Couch, Tom Couch, so long, everybody!